Good evening. This is Life Addle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Addle number 1324, we feature three stories by new Life Addle writer, Andrew Lobo. Andrew Lobo was born in Mississauga in 1992 and raised there with his elder brother and sister, Nicholas and Danielle. Chris, his father, was born in Uganda but grew up in Goa, India. Amy, his mom, was born in Bombay, India. Andrew became a vegan in 2012 and later that year chose a life of sobriety. Andrew Lobo loves nature, exercise, and spending time with his friends and family. He currently studies French and professional writing. The prose of Andrew Lobo manages to combine a quirky light touch with breathtaking gravity. The heart of his stories often lies in what is left unsaid. Andrew doesn't deliver pat answers. He gives us just enough and makes what he gives us real enough to leave us pondering. In tonight's first story, rainy weather drives two brothers to the basement to play dodgeball. When a puzzle is knocked over in the fray, the boys are confronted by their angry father. What follows is a confounding study of the complex relationships between a father and two sons. Let's listen now as Andrew Lobo reads his story, The Puzzle, tonight on Life Addle.
The Puzzle by Andrew Lobo. My brother and I sit in the family room and watch television. We flip through the channels and cannot decide on what to watch. I look outside. Rain pours down. You want to play dodgeball in the basement? I ask Nicholas. Sure, he says. We walk down the stairs to the basement. Brown carpet covers the floors. Two steel pillars support the house in the middle. We use the poles to divide the basement into a dodgeball court. Our dad's puzzle lies on a card table on one side of the court. The puzzle box displays a picture of a large house with a garden. Dad has worked on this thing for 20 years. Don't touch my puzzle, he has said many times. My mom begs him to throw it away, but he won't listen. A couple of couches block the opposite side of the court. Nicholas and I move them aside to clear the space. After we move the couches, we move the card table with Dad's puzzle to the wall at the end of the basement. We find a yellow volleyball and use it as our weapon of choice. We place the ball in the middle of the court. Nicholas walks to his side and touches the wall. And I walk to my side and touch the wall. All right, Nicholas says. On the count of three, whoever gets to the ball first gets first possession. 1, 2, 3. We sprint to the ball. I arrive first, pick it up, and smirk. Nicholas retreats to the far end of the court. I whip the ball at him, but he dodges it. The ball bounces off the wall and comes back to my side. I retrieve the ball and take my time to line him up. Haha, motherfucker, you dead, I say. I launch the ball and aim to injure. I strike him in the shoulder. The ball rolls aside, and Nicholas grabs it. He walks to the edge of his side of the court and grins. I step back and shuffle across my side. He waits patiently, then pitches the ball and smashes me in the face. The ball bounces back onto his side. My nose stings, my eyes water, I cringe near the back of the wall next to the puzzle. Nicholas shows no mercy. He hurls the ball. It zips past me and knocks against the card table. Puzzle pieces tumble to the floor. We stop. Silence. Nicholas? Andrew? What the hell was that? Our father shouts. We listen as he stomps his way down the stairs. Oh shit, Nicholas says. He bolts inside the basement washroom and locks the door. Open the door, I say. Dad stands at the bottom of the stairs and gazes at the broken puzzle. You bastards, he says. He pulls out his belt and marches straight towards me. Bathroom door flies open and my brother darts up the stairs. I follow. Dad chases us. Nicholas is the first to reach the third floor. He secures his spot in the washroom and locks the door. I make it to my room and slam the door shut. Dad trails 5 steps behind me. Bam, bam, boom. I stand petrified. Dad almost breaks the door down. We struggle for control of the door. He forces his way in. I step back and beg for mercy. Please, Dad, it wasn't me. It was Nicholas. He broke your puzzle. Dad holds his belt in his right hand, winds back, and slashes me on the leg. Ah, I cry. Dad reaches back again and hits me in the ass. He won't stop until I surrender. I burst into tears and throw myself onto my bed. He stops. I glance up at him. He does nothing. I know that if I stop my performance, he will reconsider. So I continue to cry. I glance up again, and he still has not moved. I cannot sustain my cry any longer. I laugh uncontrollably. He looks at me. I wait. He chuckles. I'm sorry, Dad, I say. Next time, you be careful. All right, I promise. My father turns around, walks into his bedroom, then closes the door. The washroom door creaks open. My brother tiptoes out. He looks at me, then smiles.
That was The Puzzle, written and read by Andrew Lobo. Tonight's second story takes place in high school, when a teacher challenges her students to explain how a desk was vandalized. Contradicting confessions cause a stir. Let's listen now as Andrew Lobo reads his story, The Desk.
The Desk by Andrew Lobo. Monday morning, at the end of my grade 9 religion class, I pack up my books and talk with my classmates. We wait for the bell to sound for second period. Miss Madden, our teacher, stands up. Everyone stops. Before anyone leaves, she says, I need to talk to you guys. She points towards a gray desk marked with scribbles. I freeze. Somebody vandalized this desk with a permanent marker. No one can leave until someone takes responsibility, she says. My classmates sigh. My heart pounds and my hands sweat. I look over my shoulder. Some of my classmates stare at me. I clench my jaw and swallow. I'm serious. We can stay here all day, she says. I know someone from this class vandalized it. It was not like that when I came in on Friday morning. I noticed it as I left after class. Everyone remains silent. Three students skipped class this morning. Justin Hill was one of them. He listens to heavy metal, paints his nails black, and draws pictures of the devil in his notebooks. "Did Justin Hill do it?" Miss Madden asks. Silence. Beep. The school bell rings, and the hallways fill with the voices of students. Miss Madden sighs. "All right," she says. She stands up, walks to the door, closes it, and returns to her seat. We continue to wait. I stare at the clock. I look left, then look right. Discontent fills the faces of my classmates. Nick Cartaginese pounces out of his seat. "All right, I did it. Now can we go?" My jaw drops. My eyes fix on him. I jump out of my seat. "Miss Madden, it was me. I did it." She pauses. Everyone stares. Nick and I exchange glances. "Miss Madden, I swear to God, it was me. Nick did not do it." "No, miss. It was me. I did it." Nick grins. She looks at the clock. "All right, the rest of the class can leave." My classmates file out. After everyone leaves, Miss Madden walks towards Nick and me. "I want you guys to meet me at lunchtime, outside my office." "Yes, miss," we respond. As we leave, I turn to Nick. "Why did you take the blame for it?" "I wanted to get out of class, man," he says. "You saved me, man. I would have been suspended." "Don't worry about it, dude," he says. Lunchtime arrives, and we meet outside Miss Madden's office. Two desks and two chairs flank the door. Miss Madden spots us through the window and signals for us to remain outside. She opens the door. She holds two pieces of paper and two pens in her hand. "You guys have detention for the whole lunch period. I want you to write an essay. Write about why you guys refuse to snitch on each other." Nick and I laugh. "All right, miss." She smiles. She places the pens and papers on the desk and returns to her office. "I don't think she believes we did it," I say. "She thinks Justin Hill vandalized it," Nick says. "Yeah, she thinks we took the blame for him, but I vandalized the shit out of that desk," I say. Nick chuckles. "I know." We work on our essays for the rest of the lunch.
That was The Desk, written and read by Andrew Lobo. Our final story tonight begins and ends with a young man alone in bed. What happens in between gently broaches the affect of depression. Let's listen now as Andrew Lobo reads his story, The Phone Call.
The Phone Call by Andrew Lobo. On a cold fall night, around midnight, I lie in my bed and talk on the phone with Megan, the girl I once loved. "I gotta go," I say. I don't wait for her to respond. I hang up. Guilt overwhelms me. How can I not feel anything for her? I have known her since grade 9. I remember our sloppy first kiss. We talked on the phone for hours. I introduced her to my parents. We joked that we would marry in California. She cheated on her boyfriend with me. I force myself to cry. I need to feel something to prove I am not a sociopath. I place my phone beside my bed. I turn onto my stomach and cram a pillow over my head. I can no longer disguise this numbness with alcohol. I've been sober for 8 months. Beep, beep, beep. I watch as my phone lights up. I think about the times Megan and I fell asleep in the same bed. The times our parents forced us to hang up when we talked late into the night. The times we got drunk and watched movies. Beep, beep. The phone lights up again. I do nothing. The phone calls stop. 45 minutes pass. My phone whistles. I have received a text message. I grab my phone and read the text. Look outside. My heartbeat speeds up. I get up, walk towards the window, pull the blinds open, and see Megan on the sidewalk. She waves. I close the blinds. I walk to my closet, put on a t-shirt and a pair of track pants. I tiptoe to the main floor. I open the door. Our eyes meet. Can I come in? She asks. I motion her inside. Why did you come here? I ask. I knew something was wrong, she says. When I hung up the phone, I cried, I confess. I know, I had a feeling, she says. We can't stay here. Do you want to walk to Tim Hortons? I ask. Sure, she responds. As we leave, I reach into the front closet, grab a jacket, and put a toque on. We walk through the streets. I look up at the moon and the stars. The night is silent. We arrive at Tim Hortons. She orders a hot chocolate and I order a bottle of water. I pay for our drinks and we sit at a table. We sit quietly as we sip our drinks. She grabs my hand and looks me in the eyes. I feel that when I talk to you, I want you to be my boyfriend, she says. I release my hand from hers. I'm sorry, Megan. I'm suffering from depression, and I need some space to figure out my life. I can help you, Lobo. We continue to talk until I notice the time. My phone reads 1:05 a.m. We leave Tim Hortons and walk back to my place. Do you think I should sleep over tonight? She asks. I think you should go home tonight. I'll call you a taxi, I say, and pull out my phone. As we approach my street, I see a car make a U-turn and speed in our direction. I grab her arm and we hide behind a fence. We have to be safe. I don't want to get jumped tonight, I say. The car drives past us. When we arrive in front of my house, the taxi driver waits. I reach into my pocket and give Megan all the change I have from Tim Hortons. I give her a hug and wish her good night. Megan enters the cab and I watch as they drive away. I open my front door, walk to my bed, and go to sleep.
That was The Phone Call, written and read by Andrew Lobo. This concludes Life Rattle number 1324. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Andrew reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Achtman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week to our Life Rattle Classic Show, hosted by Virginia Ashbury.